we want to invite you to the Intentional Motherhood Retreat 2025. For the past 2 years, hundreds of mothers from around the country have gathered with us for a weekend of worship, teaching, and connection, and really to seek God together. And we can't wait to do it all again at this year's Motherhood Retreat, this time in Portland, Oregon, October 23rd through 25th. We know that motherhood is both beautiful and it's hard. It's both life-giving and exhausting, and it's full of both joy and sacrifice. It stretches us and forms us more than anything else. This retreat really is a spiritual formation retreat for us mothers. We aren't going to give you a bunch of tips and tricks for how to be a better mom, but we are going to press into how motherhood gently leads us to spiritual formation, how relationships are essential for the journey, and how our connection with God spills over to our connection with our families. This retreat is for women who desire to be mothers someday, all the way to grandmothers and anyone in between. Mothers of babies and toddlers, young children, teenagers, and even adult children. This intergenerational gathering is a chance for all ages and stages of mothers to learn from one another, to encourage each other, and to simply be together. Because motherhood isn't meant to be done alone. The late Dallas Willard said spiritual formation can't be a private thing. It is a matter of whole life transformation. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. And that is exactly what we are going to do together. So come join us October 23rd through 25th for the Intentional Motherhood Retreat in Portland, Oregon. We can't wait to see you.
You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation.
Merry Christmas!
Yes, we made it.
It's here.
Finally. Christmas episode 2024. We were just literally talking about buying Christmas presents, which is both our bad and also I think our good. It's going to be a good thing. But you've made it to the Christmas episode. So if you're listening to this past this moment, just know that this is being released on December 24th, Christmas Eve. So what a fun time. It's very festive around here. And we're really close to Christmas, which is really exciting for all of us. And, you know, today we want to actually talk about something that many of you will in these next days, no doubt, or in family gatherings to come, we'll have to walk through. And that's that idea of talking with family members that maybe are challenging or challenging relationships, or really what's going on in our culture of people just canceling out relationships that are not convenient, easy, or really go well with what they want. And so we know this because we all are humans and we have different relationships and we have to interact, you know. Phil and Dan, I think I should tell you I'm canceling you this year. That would be very problematic for our work.
It really would. Make things real awkward.
I'm sure there's a temptation sometimes.
No. No, there's never been a temptation to cancel you. But we want to talk about this. And you know, I'll set this up and I'm going to hand it to you, Diane, because we actually, this came from a place primarily from your heart, but you had sent out a handful of letters to some of the mothers that came to the motherhood retreat. And one of them was on this topic. Yeah. And I thought we, you know, as we were all talking, this is just such an important topic. So we actually have, and I'm saying this at the top, so for accountability for all of us, but we have 8 things that we want to encourage you through. 8, you heard it right. Not 10, not 12, but 8, and not 5, but 8. It's a lot. So we're going to go to those 8. We're going to go through them. But to really go through those things, we wanted to set up the conversation today. So as a hope to give you a present when you go into your family situations, hopefully the scriptures, the Holy Spirit, and some of these points can hopefully help you and give you some perspective. So Diane, maybe just set us up with where we're going today and where this came
from. So this started while I was doing Christmas shopping, and I always love to give books at Christmas time because I love to get books at Christmas time and anytime. But I was ordering a book on Amazon for one of my kids when, you know, how Amazon does that. I don't even remember what it's called, but they recommend if you like this book, you might like this book. So, and it was a self-help kind of psychology sort of a book by a best-selling author. So, and it had just a good title. And so I clicked onto it to see what it was about. And then, you know, you can scroll over to see what the back cover is about. Well, mm-hmm. I happen to know the author pretty much always writes the back cover. So it's what the author wants you to know is a takeaway. So it's very well thought through. It's very, usually that back cover is something that is going to entice you to buy the book. Mm-hmm. So this is what I read. And as I was reading, my heart just kept sinking. Very adamantly in bold letters, stop having conversations with people who don't want to change. Stop showing up for people who are indifferent about your presence. Stop prioritizing people who make you an option. And the worst, stop loving people who aren't ready to love you. Mm. And my heart just sank because I saw myself in that. Mm. And I kept thinking, this is so different than the love that God has for us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, it would make me feel really good when there are difficult people in my life. And there have been different times in my life where that was more, you know, in my face than others. But I just kept thinking, what if God did this to me? Because especially when I first came to Jesus, and other times since, I didn't want to change. I had no desire to change. I just wanted to be loved. I was indifferent about the presence of Jesus. Mm-hmm. When I actually first came to Christ, it was a group of people I wanted to be part of, not so much Jesus. I wasn't prioritizing Jesus by any shape of the imagination. And I wasn't even sure I was ready to love him because I didn't quite understand who he was. So I just, after reading that, I stopped and just had a moment of worship that his love is so much bigger than this sort of a self-involved and self-protective kind of love. Mm. Yeah. And then we started having some conversations about this new thing called, new to me, not new historically, called cancel culture.
Yeah.
With Brooke and Elizabeth, and you know more about that than I do.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, there's different kinds of canceling, right?
Yes. And
obviously, there's the kind where you just ruin somebody's life through exposing their life in different forms, right? There's that public canceling. But I think what we're kind of talking about is the popular idea of when people are challenging, especially family members, you write them out of your life. And so what we want to talk about is primarily the way of Jesus. It's not the way of our opinion. So what we're not really going to share here is, here's all the things that we think about this. These are going to come from biblical foundational places of how to deal with relationships practically. Mm-hmm. So we do that. That's our opinion to do it this way, but primarily because it's also, I think, the way to flourishing. A lot of people choose this popular path of what you just said, of, hey, people don't have time for you. You don't have time for them. If they don't make space or time to love you, they're not, you know, all about your presence, then don't be about their presence. Now, I feel like being alive in this moment, I can nuance and understand what they're trying to do. That's an overreaction, in my estimation, to a culture that's been hurt by people that have been unloving, dismissive, abusive. Those things are real. And so we're not saying that if somebody, there are certain situations where you need to, for your own safety, for your, your own emotional safety, physical safety, even maybe even for what was done to you, you do need to step away. But that's usually, that's more rare. It's not the norm. It's not the, it's usually the exception, not the rule. And so what we would like to talk about is, like, in general, for the majority of people, we have a responsibility to sit with difficult people and to walk with them, not to write them out of our lives. And I was just reading recently Ephesians 2, but Willard's take, Dallas Willard on Ephesians 2. It was just really interesting. But Ephesians 2:2 says, "As for you, you were dead in your transgressions and sins in which you used to live when you followed the ways of the world and of the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient." It's the idea that the enemy, which we know, Satan, has responsibility and has authority, which we don't love that idea, over what's going on in our culture and time. Mm-hmm. And what I loved is what Dallas said about it. He just said it really quickly. I'll read it. This is in his book, Life Without Lack. Great book, by the way. Mm-hmm. He just said, as a reminder, in Ephesians 2, he presides over the thought patterns, the enemy, Satan. He presides over the thought patterns, the social organization, the forces of society trying to move them in opposition to God.
Yes.
And so just to highlight, this is not actually that rare or that crazy that this would be going on. This is actually very much the strategy of the enemy to popularize this idea that the best way to deal with people that are hard is to dismiss them. Now, why is that a problem? Because it's not the way of Jesus and it's super destructive. It's just guised in this way of like, you're going to have a happier, better, richer life if you dismiss people when they're hard. Right. And that's actually not the truth. And so what we hope today to do is through the scriptures and through lived experience and honesty and our own life, just share with you what God's word really does say about that. Yeah. So thoughts or scriptures before we move on. Phil, I know you got some stuff.
Well, no, just when you were reading Ephesians 2, it said you were.
Yes.
So this, you know, without the Spirit of God, the heart of man is deceitfully wicked, and this is the whole world system. But it also made me think of 1 John 2, do not love the world nor the things in the world. Well, that's the world system. Mm-hmm. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but it's from the world. Mm-hmm. And so there's this world system, and God is sovereign over all. He overrules. But yes, Satan is the ruler of this world, and he is influencing through media, through music, through movies, through culture and people who are caught up. They haven't met Christ yet, and they are caught up in this, and yet they become influencers. And so as followers of Jesus, we have to be able to discern what voices we're listening to, I think. And are we going to get caught up in the world and do what this author is saying? Hey, this is how to treat people, you know, give it back to them. You know, it's like, we all feel that way when we're hurt, you know? I'm going to hurt you back, but that's not the way of Jesus. Yes. You know, I think we want to at some point read Luke 6 here, you know, what is his way contrasted with the quotes on the back
and,
of that
and
book.
Before we start those eight things and beautifully foundationally set, Phil, I totally agree. Before we jump into those eight things, I think it is also just important to say that this doesn't mean you don't have boundaries, and this doesn't mean you don't have like times where you take a break or that there's certain people that really are in opposition to your good, right? Like there's also wisdom. Yes. So I'm saying all this to just caveat it to say, we are not giving a blanket statement that no matter what the situation, your job is to just take the abuse, take the intensity, but it's really to nuance it with the Holy Spirit and to not use that line of thinking that Diane, you were just sharing from that book. Mm. As an excuse to just not do the work of being in relationship with people. Yes. And so I just want to make that really clear because we've had times where, you know, Elizabeth and I, even ourselves, like you draw boundaries with certain people and you have to say no. And and that's actually also really good, but it's never just this blanket dismissive, it's inconvenient for me type thing. Let's set up these, let's talk about these eight things. Biblically, why don't you share, which verse were you going
to
share?
Because just a passage that Diane put in her letter to the mom.
Why don't you share that and then we'll get into
it. But before I read that, sweetheart, would you read that last bullet point from that book, the last one, which was the one that grieved you the most?
Yes. Stop loving people who aren't ready to love you.
Yeah. In other words, if you're not going to love me, forget it. I'm not going to have anything to do with you. Now, let's contrast that with the way of Jesus, because we, you know, his kingdom is, we call it the upside down kingdom. Yes. The way to up is down, etc. He said, this is Luke 6, beginning in verse 27. So I read a few verses here. But I say to you, this is Jesus talking. But I say to you who hear, because not everybody is listening to him, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. Whoever hits you on the cheek, offer him the other also. Whoever takes away your coat, do not withhold your shirt from him either. Give to everyone who asks of you, and whoever takes away what is yours, do not demand it back. Just as you want men to treat you, treat them in the same way. And I think it's interesting. He says that there. He's not saying, if they treat you a certain way, then go ahead and treat these. Yeah. No, you treat even your enemies the way you would love to be treated. And if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Mm-hmm. For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what is that to you? For even sinners do the same thing. And if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners in order to receive back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good. Lend expecting nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High. And here's the thing, for he himself, God, is kind to ungrateful and evil men. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. And then it goes on, he goes on and saying, do not pass judgment. I think we're going to talk about, are we judging people or loving people? Do not pass judgment, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you shall not be condemned. Pardon, and you will be pardoned.
Yes.
Yeah, and then use, what was what, which verse said, and you will be called sons of God?
Was that's the powerful one.
Yeah.
And that's verse 35. Love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. First of all, your reward will be great. You won't get a reward from the world. Mm-hmm. You'll get a reward from God himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that reward is coming. You'll there's some reward now. Like you said, there's a flourishing in life that comes in your heart when you see the Spirit of God enabling you to do this.
Like the impossible.
But the real reward is later, where God is going to say, well done, good and faithful servant. I saw how hard that was. I saw the hurt. I saw the mistreatment that you received. Mm-hmm. And I saw that you didn't lash out, but you loved like I love. So the reward will be great. And you will be sons of the Most High. You'll be like God is what he's saying. For he himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men.
But here's what just popped into my mind, because I've been just camping out in the Sermon on the Mount for a while now.
I know.
And that brings to mind.
You keep that book. I can't get that book.
I know. We're kind of, Phil and I are kind of sharing this old book that we actually found on our bookshelves that we neither of us had ever really done it justice. And it's a commentary on the Sermon on the Mount by Charles Spurgeon. Yeah. I can't remember when. Was it like in the 1700s that he was?
No, a long time ago.
No,
he wasn't
so it's very ancient.
But it
made me think of verse 9. In the Beatitudes or in Matthew 5, and verse 9, God blesses, this is in the New Living, God blesses those who work for peace. For they will be called the children of God. And I just thought, oh gosh, don't we all want to be called by God himself, the children of God, but those who work for peace. And God, kind of an adjunct to it, is God blesses those who are persecuted because they live for God, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. And then the Charles Spurgeon quote that I just like, but you know, I love language, but he said, "Canst thou have the nobility to forgive?" That just caught me. It is a noble thing to be forgiving in those situations. Those people.
I'm just struck by, as you read that, Dad, the long passage that you read, and then Mom, what you just said about, what did it say, those who work for peace.
Yeah.
It's, you see how much the enemy has just thwarted that in our cultural moment, that he's made it the opposite with all the beautiful things happening in the world of psychology and therapy, and so many people recognizing they need further healing and pursuing help, which I think God is all for. I think he gifts those people with that type of wisdom and knowledge. And you, anybody who has listened to us for any amount of time knows we're big fans of that whole world. And yet you see the enemy using it in the exact opposite of the scripture that you just read, using it to break families apart even further, giving full permission for anybody to say, that's toxic, I'm setting up a boundary, which is basically other language for just saying, I'm cutting you off. And yet I couldn't help but think, you know, what we tried to nuance before is there are times when you do have to take a step away, when you do have to put up healthy boundaries for yourself and for your own family. And there's, everybody's story is unique, and you just need so much wisdom from the Holy Spirit to know when those times are.
But in most of those situations you're talking about, in most of them, not everyone, but in most of them, the end goal is reconciliation.
So that's what I was just getting at, is I think God's heart is those times when we have to remove ourselves in order to heal and to work on what comes up in us when we're around those people. Uh-huh. And especially if you were raised in any sort of trauma and that trauma came from your family, from your parents, there's a lot you have to work through to be able to be with them in any sort of way and for your body to be able to be calm, to be able to go home to your kids and not be just reacting at the drop of a hat because you're so activated. But those times of when you're pulling away in that way to heal yourself, to let God heal you, to work on your relationship with God and with others, that to me is the Sermon on the Mount of what you just said, to working to pursue peace. Sometimes there does have to be distance in order for us to do that work, but it's for the purpose for our own healing so that we can be in relationship with difficult people and be able to navigate it with wisdom, to be able to unhook the people-pleasing parts of ourselves who want to fix it or make it all about us, to be able to see the nuance of somebody else's story, to see where their wounds came from. Like, there is beauty sometimes in having to take a step back. But it's not with the purpose of cutting off relationship. That's never God's heart. It's with the purpose of his long-term goal is reconciliation for all of us. And sometimes we won't see that in relationships this side of heaven. And sometimes we'll see a reordering of what that relationship was, or maybe it's an accepting on our end that the relationship, maybe we have to grieve that the relationship is probably not going to be what we deeply hope for it to be, but it doesn't mean there can't be some sort of relationship there. Yeah,
right.
You know? Well,
and I think maybe because we do have eight, if you guys remember, there's eight of them.
We should probably
That's why I said it is, but I do want to just even everything, everyone's so helpful. And what Elizabeth said is very important. And I also want to, it's not even pushback, but maybe just like highlight a nuance that a lot of what we're saying is true, that a lot of people or certain people actually do need to take a step away. The problem is that some are going to be hearing this right now and with no real authority or even real communication with other people, you're deciding, well, I'm one of those people because it's hard with my parents or it's hard with my family. And one of the things that's really tricky right now is that with the lack of authority or people being under authority, biblical authority, practical authority, it meaning, and no one in our culture likes this word, but there's authority in the scriptures. We have, God is in authority over us. He's also put places and structures over us for our protection. A lot of the times we don't even bounce this off of people. We'll just kind of internally decide. Well, I mean, it was hard with my parents. So I guess they're talking about, most people are going to hear this and go, I am the one that is totally justified in stepping away.
My parents are toxic.
And I'm just telling you, probably not. And if you are, if you make a decision that quickly, I'm telling you, you are using it as an excuse. You have to be so careful. Yes. It's usually done, for me, it has been done with a therapist, deep friends, family, relationships, and it's not taken a year, 2 years. It's taken five. It's taken 10 years. And I haven't even written anyone out of my life, right? I'm just telling you, hard relationships are never just this quick dismissal of like, well, I had these couple of conversations. So I just want to say, if you're hearing this and you're excusing yourself and saying, okay, I'm in the category that they're talking about as other, I would say, no, do not just jump and put yourself
don't
in there.
Do it alone.
Talk to your spouse, talk to your therapist, talk to your family, talk to your pastor. What church do you go to? Do you go to church? Do you have any authority over your life? These are things that you really need to check into before you do this.
So glad you're saying that.
As most of you know by now, this entire podcast was made possible by the generosity of our legacy builders. Intentional is a crowdfunded nonprofit made possible by the generosity of everyday, ordinary people like you and like me. Yes, we have some people who give monthly to legacy builders in a large dollar amount, but we desire to invite a whole new group of people to give at $10, $25, or even $30 a month. If you're like me, you most likely already pay $20 a month for Netflix, $10 a month for Apple Music, $5 a month for Spotify and various offerings. Would you consider giving monthly to Intentional at $5 or even $10 a month? Our dream is to see ordinary people step up and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families all over the world. So as you listen to the podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us as God is stirring in your heart? Will you partner with us, even if it's just for a few dollars a month? Thank you so much for considering joining. Enjoy the rest of today's episode. And if you're interested, go to our website, intentionalparents.org, and click on give.
You know, I read Proverbs every day.
Yes.
Know? So on the 18th, the verse is, he who separates himself seeks his own desire. So if I separate myself from Diane, if I say, I'm not going to listen to you because you just hurt my feelings or whatever, or I don't listen to you and Elizabeth when you're appealing to me to look at something differently, if I get arrogant, like, hey, I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do. And then the church, we're part of, once you are born again and you receive the Spirit and Ephesians 2:2, you're no longer
part of the air,
you know, dead in your trespasses and sins, but you become alive to God. You're in a family. And so community is so important, which is why Hebrews says, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together, as is the habit of some. When you become the Lone Ranger, you're going to get off, and then you're going to get more off, and pretty soon it's just going to be whatever you think and your two best people that agree with you and are getting bitter just like you are. And that's, I think, so it's true. So dangerous and so sad. Yes. And that's what Satan wants to do. He wants to divide and get you out of the fire, so you'll just, you know, be like a, literally like a coal that came out of the fire and it'll die off. And so he loves to do that. He loves to, hey, you have been hurt. They don't deserve you anymore. Just just leave them. And pretty soon you're leaving that person and that person. I'm so glad you said that, because we can't do this apart from the power of the Holy Spirit.
Yes.
And people around us that we're living in community with, who can actually lovingly rebuke us when we start, you know, walking after the flesh.
We're too isolated. Most of us are too isolated. We live our life in isolation with a false sense of community through social media. And we think we're more connected, but no one in your social media group can call you out for the junk that you're hiding.
Exactly.
And nobody, I mean, and it's so interesting because you have all these folks that have this wonderful social media presence that have terrible lives. And I don't mean terrible lives like we're judging your life. I'm saying their lives are falling apart. They're just sharing those moments. Obviously, we know that. But I would just say, wherever you're at, these questions are for you to process. We want to give you just some heads up biblically. What does this look like? And what does it look like from our experience, right? So this is both like lived out, but it's also stuff that is really clear in the scripture. So the first one of the eight, we'll go through them pretty quickly. Don't cancel your family or friends. Like, just first of all, like, just stop. Don't cancel your family or friends. And Diane, you said this in your first point. Instead, pray for them with the love of the Father. He can soften the hardest, proudest, most unwilling of people's hearts. And so let's talk about that for just a brief moment. I'm going to keep us brief, but
a couple of thoughts I have is, one, a prayer that a mentor counseled me to pray when I was confused about a hurtful relationship was, she said, why don't you ask God to enlarge your heart to love this very difficult to love situation.
Wow.
And that word, enlarge my heart, I just thought, gosh, I think we start off loving very small, you know, basically people who just are amazingly loving towards us and encouraging all the time and giving towards us. But I think as we mature in our walk with God, which happens because we're absorbing more and more and more of his love for us, our hearts just naturally get bigger and more capable of loving. But I think this is a really good prayer to pray, is God would, especially for those who've been hurt, especially for those who have been hurt as children, and maybe it's been reinforced in a really hard marriage or relationship, that instead of shriveling up and super self-protective love, that God would enlarge our heart to love people well. So,
you know, when I think of, that's so beautiful. When I think of cancel culture, so you don't do that until you've judged someone unworthy of your love, or because they've hurt you. And I think that I've seen in my own life, I can be so judgmental and critical, and immediately see something. I think we do this in marriage too. We see everything that's still wrong with our spouse. And there's a lot of stuff wrong with me. Not as much with Diane, more me. But it's so easy to, you know, Jesus said, hey, take the log out of your own eye before you move the speck out of your brother's eye. But I think that it really gets down to, are we setting ourselves up as judge? And I want to read just really three short verses that, when we were getting ready for this, came to my mind. And two of them are from James. I just finished reading James again. But James 5 verse 9 says, do not complain, brothers, against one another. And in the Greek, it's groan, like, don't groan against each other, that you yourselves may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. Hmm. So that only God knows everything because he sees the heart. And so he's the only one really that can judge because he knows what's really going on. And in James 2, and you know, we like to sing that song, Mercy Triumphs Over Judgment. So that's straight out of James 2. So speak and so act as those who are to be judged. So we're going to get judged. For judgment will be merciless to one who has shown no mercy. Hmm. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Mm-hmm. And in the margin of my Bible, it says mercy boasts against judgment. It's like mercy says, I'm better than you. It's like mercy saying, you think you're so great, judgment? Well, hey, I'm gonna brag about you that I'm mercy and I'm better than you are. And the other verse is from 1 Corinthians 4. And it's, so this is all over the Bible. It says here in verse 5, don't go on passing judgment before the time, but wait until the Lord comes, who will both bring to light the things hidden in the darkness and disclose the motives of men's hearts. And then each man's praise will come to him from God. So that's what I think when we are merciful, because his spirit's enabled us to be like him because he's merciful, there's a reward that is coming. Yep. Each reward will come, but before the time, because he sees everything like we can't see.
We're usually too quick to jump.
We're too quick to cancel somebody. And I just think the phrase that sticks with me is, it's God's job to judge people. It's our job to love people.
Yes.
And we got to remember that. And I'm speaking to myself here.
Oh, I think, but I think that's the truth. It is.
Well, and I think at first.
I almost got to the second one.
I'll make it quick. I almost got there. It's so easy to hear, well, don't cancel them, just pray for them. That can sound really nice and Christian and like the thing you're supposed to say. But I think something to note, at least in my own experience, is that yes, we know prayer moves the hand of God. Prayer can change their heart. Prayer can better the situation. But I think in the situation that we're actually talking about, one of the maybe more powerful things, or maybe also something that happens when we pray, is God softens our heart towards those people as we pray.
That's good.
And even if you're coming to God in prayer, I mean, I had a situation, a relationship where I knew God was asking me to pray because I was like at the point in forgiveness where it was time to start praying for this person. And when I first started praying for this person, I struggled to get any meaningful words out of my mouth. And so I just prayed whatever words I could pray. Would you just bless this person's day? That's all I could pray in that.
That's a good one.
Because I knew my heart didn't actually at that moment want this person's good. And so I started praying, God, will you enlarge my heart, change my heart to be able to pray authentic prayers for this person. And so I think that's also what God does when we come to him and say, I want my heart to be good towards this person. Mm-hmm. It's not right now. Would you help it? So pray the little prayers you can pray, the little prayers of blessing. And then, at least in my own lived experience, over time, those prayers evolve to something more. They actually evolve to true forgiveness. And sometimes it starts as obedience. We know God tells us to pray. So even if you're starting with, I'm just doing this to be obedient, not because I feel like it or I have any blessing in my own heart that I want to pray for that person. But God, I'm going to show up and I'm going to pray. And would you enlarge my heart? And I think that's so often what he does.
That's so good.
That's great. Yeah.
So good.
It's number two. First, don't cancel your family. Instead, pray for them. That's, yes, don't be quick to do that. Pray. Second, sometimes the most loving thing to say is no. So that's really interesting too. Because what we want to highlight is there are times that you're going to need to potentially even say no. That doesn't mean, no doesn't mean cancel. So I think there's a line of discernment that I think you have to have with a group of people, not just yourself, of when is that time to say no? Maybe it's no to a family gathering. Maybe it's no to a certain type of interaction or frequency of relationship. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's no to ongoing connection for a while. You know, when my dad had died, my dad died about actually 3 years ago this month. He died December 27th. When any family member dies, and we hadn't gone through that as a family, but when somebody dies, it upsets every system and every relationship, especially when it's a father figure or mother or father. And then especially when, you know, he was fairly young, he was 57. So all that to say, there was a lot of like just stuff I had to process. And I remember calling my mom. I know she won't mind me saying this, but I remember calling my mom and just saying, it's not, I don't think it's you, but I don't know. So I just need space to think. Like, I just can't call you all the time. Like, I just, and she wasn't like she never, you know, said you need to call me all the time, but she would obviously just like any mom, if I didn't check in, be like, what's going on? Is everything fine? Yeah. And I remember I had to say like, it's not you per se. It's just like, I need space to just take a step back to process all of these feelings that I have about all of life and family and dad passing and all that stuff. And it was like, she wasn't pumped about that. And I wasn't pumped about that per se. And it was totally hard and awkward. And at the very same time, it was really helpful to just have a break. And I didn't do this in a abrupt, rude, unloving way. But I also knew I couldn't like practically get past certain parts of my own processing without taking a break from like, because anytime, you know, we would talk, we would obviously talk about the things that were hard and talk about how she was feeling about stuff. And it would just every time, you know, unintentionally, it'd bring up stuff for me too. So, you know, there was a time to say no. That was my, you know, practical example, but just depends.
And I think sometimes the no needs to be gently corrective, like, and very specific. There was a time when, you know, I adored my dad. He was a good dad to me and felt close to him and known to him as much as he was able to from a different generation. But my parents' values were a little bit, you know, nuanced from ours. Mm-hmm. And their method of discipline was very different than ours. It was more intense and very verbal. And there was a time that he corrected one of my toddlers who was making a bit of a mess of his sidewalk with sand. And it was pretty intense. It was overly intense. And so I had to drum up the courage to say no to my dad, which was probably the first time in my life that I was in that situation. And Phil really helped me with it. But to basically say no, but this is what you need to do in that situation. This is not the approach that we're taking. It's okay that you don't agree with me. But I don't want you to discipline my kids. When I'm here, I want you to talk to me and say, hey, Di, get on top of this. You know, you can say it to me, but not to my children.
Yeah.
Let me deal with it. Bring it to my attention. I don't want to be oblivious. I don't want to be you know, my kids to come and wreak havoc in your home. But you address me, I will address my children.
Sure.
And he was not happy with that.
Can't imagine.
And I did need to say in that case, because he so vehemently disagreed, okay, well, I need to give you time to think about it, but I'm not bringing the kids over until you agree.
Well, that's because he said no. He's going to do what he's going to do.
Yeah, basically.
He said, He didn't agree with her. He said, I'm going to discipline him the
Which
way I think that would be disciplined.
I love that you shared that, though, because I think I talk to people a lot who they're working through their own feelings about, it's usually their parents, like things with their parents. But now we have this added layer of, I now have kids and I don't like what's happening in that dynamic and the things they're saying in front of them. And and what do I do?
Obviously, some of my childhood hurt is coming up in that moment.
Yeah. And I think those are tricky situations. Yes. Back to what, Brooke, you said of like, these aren't just rash decisions that we can make alone, especially when we carry deep hurt and emotion attached to them, but they involve our kids where we are supposed to protect them.
Yeah.
Those are things we need to bring a community into to pray for us, to help us navigate. Mm-hmm. How do I navigate this holiday? How do I decide if I'm going to go or not and bring my kids? We've had to approach it from every which angle. It's tricky.
I was just going to say, most people that are listening to this podcast, if you are, you're probably a parent or a person or a spouse who's like, I want to be thoughtful about my life. I want to be thoughtful about my kids. I want to be protective. I want to not react. I want to protect. So, but I just need to say something to any parent, because most of the time there's a type of person who follows this. And why I'm saying this, what I'm about to say, will make total sense. But there's a lot of people that will hear some of this stuff, and you take some of this like too seriously, Meaning you take some of these like moments where your parents maybe say things you don't like, or the environment's not perfect, or it doesn't line up with bedtime, and you get like too intense. Yes. So can I just say to anyone, take a breath. Yeah. Your kids can actually are more flexible than you give them credit for. They can be around, you know, it's like that idea. I remember with training for a marathon. I remember one of our trainers said, you know, most of the time running and eating healthy is like a flowing river. Like sometimes if you're eating clean most of the time and it's a flowing river, you can throw some mud in and it will wash away pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, most of the time you need to be eating in a healthy way, similar to your kids. If your culture and environment at home are healthy and safe and secure and have like, your parents might be a little bit brash, or they might be different, or there might be some language, right? Like there could be these things, right? And I'm not trying to make fun or light of them. I'm just saying, there's a lot of people that get very uptight about that. And I would say your worry is in the wrong place. A lot of the times you need to think actually about creating this perfect, unrealistic life for your kids, because they have to have some level of learning how to go through weird circumstances and or moments. Or
dealing with difficult people.
With difficult people. Yeah. And I'm not saying everyone's extended family is that way. I'm just saying there's a lot of times that the tension shows up there. And I've heard more and more of like, well, I don't even know if we're going to go over to the family's house because, you know, they think differently than we do, or maybe even believe differently. And it's like, you can still be around people that
they
believe.
They kept my kid up beyond seven. I said they need to go to seven, so I'm canceling them.
Yeah. You know, like, there is that. And unfortunately we get to see all the different, with what we do with intentional, we get to hear about a lot of this stuff. So, you know, some of this stuff is coming from some of the very funny and interesting, and like, honestly, sometimes to me, even surprising conversations of folks that are like, you know, they'll want to be so thoughtful that they unintentionally take it too far. So I just want to say.
Well, Diane was able to say no without canceling her father.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
And that he eventually came around, not because he ever agreed.
No.
Yeah. But because her mom said, I want to see my grandchildren.
And I wasn't saying you couldn't be with my kids.
No.
I just, I don't even know. I didn't even really clearly know what I was saying. I just knew that this was harmful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what you said is so important, Elizabeth, seeking counsel.
Yes. Yeah.
What if dad had never come around? We are a stubborn lot.
What? Tell me more.
That's very possible.
Really?
So then counsel would have been sought. I would have gone to my mentor. And as it was, Phil and I were talking together quite a lot. And he was giving me, as he always has, perspective, softening my stubborn stance. I'm never bringing those kids over if they're going to be yelling at my kids. So I think what you're saying is really important, Brooke. Is that we lose judgment when we've been hurt over certain things.
Yeah.
We, I think I used the word yesterday with you when we were going on a walk, Brooke. Yeah. How I'm I know that I'm beguiled over certain things, which means led to believe something beyond. And so I know one area I'm very prone to beguile is that I'll take everything as rejection in my relationships. And I've learned that I don't have good judgment in this area. Misinterpret very easily. So the minute I'm feeling rejection in a relationship, I go to Phil. And I will show him the text or repeat the conversation or the situation and lean on his judgment, because he doesn't have wounds in that area. So he gives me good counsel. And I think it's important to me at that moment to submit to his healthier relational view. And that's that whole seeking counsel thing. If you've been hurt, you may tend to overblow or overdo or overreact to situations that you're still healing over. And that's where you need somebody's judgment to rely on.
We can all be beguiled. You begin to think something is true that's not even true.
Yeah.
Oh, he must. This is how he feels about me. This is how, you know, it's not even true, but we think it's true.
Yeah. Well, let's keep moving on. That was all very helpful. The third one, do apologize sincerely when you react in unloving ways. We don't need to spend a lot of time on this because we do a lot of talking about this, but when it's in your court, take responsibility. And Diane, I think what you had just said about, on point number two, is actually really helpful. there's just moments where we don't see it correctly and we overreact and overrespond. Yes. And if that happens, which it will, I mean, like, it's going to happen. It does happen. Yeah. Just be quick to apologize. And I think there is a space where there's a lot of tension. Even I'm trying to think, I won't use names or examples, but even when all of the family got together, even the Comer crew recently, there was some tension and some members really quickly were like, oh, okay, well, I'm sorry. You know, I got off there. I said that too intensely, whatever. And it's great. It's just like, yeah, that, like, there's a moment of tension.
Yeah.
You probably overreacted a little, but it was like solved in a second. Yeah. And so I think there's a beauty to that. And I think we all have a responsibility to just keep short accounts with that stuff. I think a lot of those things can be like, oh, you know, I overresponded because I'm just feeling a lot.
Yeah.
That's good. And I know that not every family culture is that way, but even if your family culture isn't that way, there is a human language of forgiveness, of giving and receiving that does bring healing. So I think even if that's not your ecosystem of your family of origin or even your family, I think you can quickly apologize and it's still received and better than not.
Yeah.
And we're not going to talk about how to apologize, but the one thing is to be specific.
Yes.
Just say, hey, I raised my voice at you.
Important.
I'm so sorry. That was not the way to handle this. You know? So please forgive me.
Yeah.
It's a lot of space to power.
So much better than just, oh, sorry about that.
Well, I
want to say I totally agree. I also would say if this isn't something you're used to, that might be hard. So saying sorry for that is better than nothing.
It's better than nothing.
That said, though, I would say following Phil's advice is important. Be specific if you can.
Yeah.
And because I mean, I understand that. So the fourth thing, remember that love is not a feeling. I just laugh at it because that is so, like, talk about the air of the world. Like, that is not what the world says. Like, every single Hallmark movie right now, great. Love is a feeling.
Oh, yes.
And you got to get that feeling. Your life's going to be fine. But, I mean, love is a way of being towards, and Diane, you said this, but love is a way of being towards even the most hurtful of people and enemies. Yeah. So let's just talk about that really quick. Love is not a feeling. So,
okay.
That's important.
I got the verse for it.
Go, baby, go.
Romans 5:8.
Yeah.
Yes.
But God demonstrated his love for us.
Yes.
And that, well, why were we yet sinners? He died for us. He didn't say, oh, I feel so happy about you right now. No, he demonstrated it through sacrificial, his literally death. Mm-hmm. He said there was no hope for these creatures that he created that he loved deeply. Yeah. To be with him forever, unless he would cover their sin.
Mm-hmm.
So he demonstrated this is not a feeling. It's an action. It's an act of the will to love someone.
But under
I was just going to add, and he did that with no promise that we would choose him.
Exactly.
And I think that's key there. So often we are doing quote unquote loving things in hopes that it will turn somebody towards us or we apologize in hopes that they will and yet that act of love and sacrifice, him giving himself fully for us, knowing there would be so many of us who would not choose him.
Yeah.
I think that just teaches us something right there.
You know, I just looked at two verses before, in verse six, he says, while we were still helpless, he died for the ungodly.
Yeah.
So we couldn't save ourselves.
No.
And so I think that's totally true what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes. So I was just going to do one nuance.
Yeah.
Do not say to a person, I love you, but, and then bless them. Okay. Just
that's not love.
Been there, done that. Had it done to me.
Yeah.
That is just like, let's just strike that from what's
the Christian version
go-to vocabulary.
Oh, bless their heart. But
bless
them. Lord bless them.
Bless their heart. But is like
you,
just a setup for I'm about to gossip
wrong with
about
you right now.
Well, that's so true. So yeah, remember that love's not a feeling. Like this is an act of the will in many ways. And so fifthly, don't make the hurt all about yourself. Yeah. That's hard, but that's also a really important truth that right now, most often we think about how all of these things have impacted me, how they've impacted my situation, my circumstance, and no doubt for sure they have, but you're not the only person in that situation. And I wish more people would take time to learn about where like as an example, within their family context, if it is your parents,
yeah,
that they would take time to sit with empathy towards what their parents' experience was. Yeah. I remember the first time I really started talking to my therapist about some of this stuff, he forced me in the best way to, anytime I would say something that was negative or frustrating or like, yeah, but this, and they, like, this was the, that was the heart, and they did this. He would never like join in and be like, oh man, yeah, you're, that's just the worst. He would actually say, well, have you thought about what that must have been like for them? And it's like, no, I'm just so busy thinking about myself, you know? Yeah. And I know he was a godly man, and he was pushing me to do something that was so Jesus-y, which is,
yeah,
just remember, this is not super linear, clear, easy. And it didn't excuse anything as much as it just gave me compassion to say, yeah, wow, if I was in a similar situation, would I actually have the same kind of response? Yeah. Would I respond better or worse? Most of the time I could say, I think I would respond worse. Yeah. So it's just not all about you. It's
and
important.
Again, Paul talks about compassion as something you put on, like you put on your coat.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily something you feel.
Mm. Yeah.
You choose.
Yeah.
So it's the same. Love is not a feeling. Compassion is not a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It can lead to feelings, but it's something we choose.
Yes. Yes.
To put on.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, turning from making it all about how I feel and how it's affected me, and being able to do what Jim led you through, of being able to look at somebody else's story and their family of origin. I think that really is a really mature, for a lack of better word,
yeah,
that is a sign of maturity when you're able to work through your own hurt enough. And I remember that journey. First, there was a long season of him helping you work through your own hurt first. And then be angry and be all like, feel all the things that you needed to feel. It was like a year in that he then started leading you to understand their stories. And so I think that is a sign of maturity when you're able to move through all the things you're feeling, but then be able to say, but this is not just about me.
Yeah.
That whole, I mean, there's so many sayings that we've all heard a million times, hurt people hurt people. And it's true. Our own hurt, our own things that have been passed down generationally, they hurt people. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of healing and freedom, especially as a parent, when we're able to see where our parents came from, to see where their parents came from, to see where the church came from. I mean, so much of the church hurt that we talk about these days comes sometimes from our own lack of understanding of why the church maybe handled something in one way when we were growing up. And maybe they're handling it very different now, but we were hurt by things of the past. Mm-hmm. But if we can even understand church history and why certain things were done certain ways, it really helps in us understanding the bigger picture going on, which makes it not just about our hurt, going back to what this is about.
Even with talking about the enemy coming in and messing with social structures and thought ideas, like, there's so many things even right now where, without really studying, the culture is saying, well, we need to be really inclusive of everybody that has any sort of feeling, whether that's their gender, their sexuality, their marriage choices, like, we need to be all inclusive. Now, the hard part about that is, like, there's a lot of clarity around that in the scriptures. And where we get really off really quickly is when we just think about our own situation. Like you're saying, we don't take in context all of the things going on right now. We basically make our decisions based upon what culture is saying and how we should be inclusive, rather than like going to actually understand what the scriptures say, going through thoughtful, godly people. So I don't want to get off on that. I'm just saying,
yeah,
there, when we make these decisions, we have to ask, is this more of what culture is leading me into, or is this what God's actually telling me? And it comes in a lot of different ways. So we have don't feel sorry for yourself specifically. Or don't make it all about you. My iPad closed for a second. And sixthly, this is a little bit of the similar thing, but just as a reminder, you can be honest with to yourself and others to help carry the burden. I think it's important to be honest with yourself. Be honest with not only what's going on in you, and there's certain people that can help you when it comes to the idea of gossip. Philly, I think you said this a long time ago and it's always stuck with me. unless you're a part, like if you're wondering, is it gossip or not? Unless that person you're talking to about the situation is a part of the problem or the solution, it's gossip. So there's certain people that you need to bring in that are going to be a part of the problem that you maybe need to talk to or a part of the solution. Yeah. And so I think that's important to have a trusted group of people, therapists, family, friends, depending upon who that person is. So I don't want to take a lot of time on that. I just wanted to mention that because the other ones are
I think that's the last two.
Well, the last two are just super important as well. Were you going to say something?
Or, I mean, I think we've already mentioned this, even Mom, with you saying, because you know you're hurt, you bring things to Dad to say, am I reading this right?
Yes.
Because you know he doesn't carry the same hurt that you do. That's a beautiful example of that as well, of people being so in it with you and understanding and knowing you enough that they're going to give you wise counsel, that Dad's not reading every single thing and be like, you should be offended by that.
almost always. Oh, Di, I think you kind of got it wrong, or you got, you're being going too far with it.
I think even for, there's a lot of, I feel like this maybe hits women more than men sometimes, but I think women oftentimes have a hard time trusting their own intuition about things. Like, I know that's been a thing for me that I'm still trying to learn to, that I actually do have a spirit-led intuition about things that I'm quick to ignore. And I'm still trying to unpack fully what that's about.
How many times has your mother told you that?
I know. So I need people in my life that I can say, okay, this is my, like, I call it a gut feeling, but this is my like gut feeling about it, but I'm questioning myself. Should I be or not? You know? But yeah, we need to be doing that in community.
I think that. And also, when we're going to talk to somebody, what we don't really need is just somebody to vent to. Even if you're an external processor, sometimes an external processor needs to say it all. What we really need is somebody who will then carry that with us to the Father and say, okay, he is the one who is the healer, who's the help. Just, I don't know why, but I think we need that reminder almost constantly. That it's not the other, the other person who hurt me is not the person who's going to heal me in the end. In the end, the healing comes from God.
That's a great point.
Really important. And that's kind of what codependency happens when you've been hurt and you think that the person who hurt you is supposed to heal you. It just doesn't work that way in God's kingdom.
I just got to say, since I am the external processor ad nauseum, the whole family knows that.
What? Tell us
You're laughing at me. What a blessing that God gave Diane to me, who is trustworthy, the heart of her husband trusts in her. Where she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. When you have a spouse like that, that can keep a confidence, but then she actually does carry that burden with me and then bring it to the Father. So what a beautiful thing. If you've got that, and you're the people listening to this, if you've got any version of that in your marriage, thank God for it. It's a gift from him.
Good point. That's a good point. Last two, real quick. Practice mercy towards everyone. And then everyone, literally everyone. Practicing mercy is important. Let's just 2 seconds on that idea of mercy, because obviously mercy is an interesting idea. It's, you know, not giving somebody something that they
deserve,
what they could deserve. Right. So, so practicing mercy is you literally practicing holding back, practicing not saying what you could say, what you totally would have the right to say. So,
well, I think the verse that I quoted earlier from James 2, mercy triumphs over judgment. Mercy boasts, brags against judgment. I'm better than you. And I just think, remember mercy that is God is merciful. It's part of who he is. If he wasn't merciful to us, I mean, you know, the story Jesus told about the Pharisee standing, I thank you, God, that I'm not like other men. And then there's the guy that was unwilling to look up. And he said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. That's the sinner's prayer right there. And God, and Jesus said, that man went to his house justified. Okay, because God is merciful. So God saw his heart. He saw the Pharisee boasting about how righteous he was. And Jesus said, that's not the guy that, that is blessing my father. It's this humble man who knows how unworthy he is. Yeah. And then God was merciful to him. So I think,
it's back in the Beatitudes. Yes. Once again, these are kind of the characteristics of the kingdom.
That's Jesus' manifesto for kingdom living. Yes. It's a Beatitudes. You just can't, you can't get enough out of it. You got to read them over and over. But go ahead. Quote.
And, you know, the word, you know, the NLT uses God blesses, but really if you study it, it's a type of a language that includes flourishing. So a person who flourishes is a person who shows mercy. So in the NLT, it's God blesses those who are merciful. And then I like this. Here's the benefit. For they will be shown mercy. And I tell you what, I certainly need a lot of mercy. And so for me to withhold mercy is I'm withholding mercy for myself as well. And this is for human flourishing, we must practice mercy.
Yes. That's the sowing and reaping. We reap what we sow. So judgment will be merciless to those who show no mercy, James, too. So,
Lastly, we've made it through all 8. Good job. If you're still listening, for the 2 people listening right now, thank you for hanging in there. We made
it. It's now Christmas of 2026. Yes.
It's the new year at this point.
Short-windedness is not our gifting.
One thing to do is do rejoice. Do rejoice with those who rejoice.
Yeah.
And be proud of their successes. Diane, you said this, and I think this is great. Be proud of their successes. Call out the good you see in them. Most hard people are masking their own self-hatred.
Yes.
And that's really could not be more true. More hard people than we know are just masking how much disappointment and shame they have on themselves.
Yeah.
So what we can do is give them what we wish they would do for us. We can actually start the positive cycle of good and healing. And I mean, it's hard when you're in close context with family and they don't, they don't take interest. They don't say good things. You know, they don't even know necessarily how to, or maybe their whole world is so hard that they can't even say, you know, take interest into your life or say nice things. But I think we can do that for other people. Yeah.
And that's bless those who persecute you, you know, whether the persecution is showing no interest in you whatsoever, never asking you a question, not seeing who you are now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes in families, especially siblings, will see you through the lens of the worst stage of your life. Like, for me, I think it was about 15, you know, or right in there leading up to about 15. I don't want my siblings to treat me like I'm still that flaky 15-year-old girl who was struggling. But when they do, we can choose not to do the same back.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
To bless them.
Absolutely.
To see them as grown-up human beings who are taking responsibility for their lives and see the good in them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So wherever you are at, be slow. Follow Jesus' scripture. I'm not going to go through all 8 things because there's too many, but they'll be in the show notes so you can look at them again. But we do all want to say Merry Christmas. 1, 2, 3. Merry Christmas.